On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here it is, Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is, of course, our home. That's where you'll find a selection of the day's news stories. I actually got around to doing that today. Yay me. I rock. You'll also find the entrance to the chat room. Folks wandering in even now, even as I speak. Good evening to Mr. Gibson and Jan and Jerry. Good evening to Bean, and of course, Sparky is there, ready as ever in his indefatigable duties as moderator. No, really, Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I'm looking forward to it because it's looking pretty thorny. Also, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, of course, you will find the PayPal button and some good news to announce. We were entering the evening about $50 in the hole. And that just got taken care of by Barry. Thank you, Barry. Which means that we then just begin with our usual evening's $150 fundraising goal. And 20 of that just got taken care of by Asa right before airtime. So thank you, Asa. We've got about 13 folks at 10 bucks a piece to go. Hopefully that will blow by pretty quickly, and that'll just leave us tomorrow to finish the month of May, where we ought to and need to be. So thank you very much to Barry and to Asa for getting us started. As noted, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. That's where we take a look at things that make us go, "Dope!" And there are a lot of them. Dadgummit. I'm sorry, I was a little late hitting the third switch because I got a late-breaking West Virginia story in from Asa. I love the way that you guys, no matter where you are on the planet, you have become attuned to West Virginia life. And I got a fascinating story, and it's a feel good, it's a heart warmer, and there's no way that Asa could have known, but it's got a sort of attenuated horn connection to it, and the story has made it all the way to the Mail Online over in the UK. Do you ever use post online reviews of places that you eat or places that you shop or whatever? I mean, I've done it a few times. Generally, I'm too busy trying to enjoy the meal. But sometimes when I just want to make sure that people know that, because I try to give a decent, you know, a fairly informative review. Well, not everybody's like that. You may recall a few months ago when the owner of some sort of a restaurant in down there in Treason Central, you know, South Carolina. You may recall that. He put up a sign saying, "If you feel like you have to carry your guns in here, you're not welcome." Then called him something, you know, jerk offs, piss wads, whatever. And people from all over the country began posting reviews to the restaurant site, even though they'd never been there, because, you know, right wingers are dishonest that way. Well, this isn't that story, but it comes out of West Virginia, and it's about a little joint in Morgantown. Morgantown, otherwise known as Cambridge on the Mon. Now, you know, that's the home of the State University, West Virginia University. my alma mater, as a matter of fact. Well, there's a little joint up there called the Atomic Grill. And some skeevy dude, and this fits in with some other skeevy dude stories in the program this evening. Some skeevy dude left a review online of the Atomic Grill, which, by the way, has just killer hamburgers and lots of yummy food. A customer posted an online review of the Atomic Grill in Morgantown when skeevy person, anonymously, of course, said, "Y'all need to have your waitresses show a little more skin." Yeah, skin. I mean, does that make your skin crawl? It does mine. So Daniel McCauley, who is the owner of the Atomic Grill, decided he would turn the skeeviness on its ear. And this story's gone viral. It's all over the world now. He's just turned the skeeviness on its ear by offering a potato. It's going to happen. It's running this weekend, tomorrow through Monday. A potato skin fundraiser. This was last week. A potato skin fundraiser. And he's selling a platter of 4 loaded potato skins, 2 buffalo chicken, and 2 barbecue ones. And all the proceeds went to the rape crisis centers. It's actually termed the West Virginia Foundation for Rape Information and Services. They maintain 9 rape crisis centers across the state of West Virginia. And I'm sure the money is badly needed. The owner is the son of one of the principal researchers who has gone a long way toward proving the horrors, the health horrors of mountaintop removal. No kidding. Which is really, really, well. He's the scientist from whom I have learned so very, very much about airborne particulate matter. So how, well, the owner of the restaurant also called for donations just to be made straight away to the West Virginia Foundation for Rape Information and Services as well. But coming away from the whole thing, he said, "You know, it's good that people out there won't stand for this brutish mentality anymore." Except that we're not quite over that hump yet. Because if it wasn't a brutish, misogynistic mentality that was involved in the Isla Vista, Santa Barbara shootings, well, I don't know what was. But, that's an appropriate way to push back against this stuff. Not showing enough skin? Okay, well, here's your skins. 2 buffalo skins, 2 barbecue skins. Proceeds go to a rape crisis center. Neat, huh? I thought so. But no, we're not quite to the point where this kind of brutish conduct is no longer tolerated. We're rather a long way from it, I'm afraid. What am I looking for here? Oh, yeah. Let's go to Texas from the Department of Ew. One of the ways you can sort of separate yourself from the pack in being a roadhouse is to be sort of old-fashioned and edgy. And that brings us to Scruffy Duffy's Bar in Plano, Texas. According to WFAA-TV, a woman named Courtney Williams was a patron in the bar, and she saw, you know how they'll have these signboards, you know, they're basically chalkboards, and they'll write stuff on them in colored chalk to sort of, you know, be, what, edgy or engaging or whatever, you know, marketing, right? Well, over at Scruffy Duffy's, the bartender or an employee of Scruffy Duffy's, well, she put the sign up on the chalkboard at the bar, and it read as follows. I like my beer like I like my violence domestic. No, really. And then at the end of the word domestic, she also drew a heart. I like my beer like I like my violence domestic. Mm-hmm. And when Courtney Williams went to someone in the bar and said, you know, that's incredibly inappropriate, the bartender said, well, we're not going to take it down. And the article goes to great lengths to explain that it was a female bartender who made the sign. Courtney Williams then asked the manager to remove the sign. And the manager also said, uh-uh. Over at the Plano Women's Shelter, Vanessa Vauder, who is the education program manager there, said, thank you, Ms. Williams, for standing up and saying this isn't okay. When 1 in 4 women are affected by domestic violence, and in Collin County alone, that's Texas, last year we had over 12,000 incidents of domestic violence, then this isn't something we joke about. Only after Courtney Williams' photograph began to go viral on Facebook did Scruffy Duffy's respond. And apparently it's corporate. That's when corporate got involved and said, it has come to our attention that one of our female employees wrote something offensive without owner's approval. Domestic violence is something our family unfortunately has overcome in the past. Therefore, the subject is one we don't take lightly. We are currently investigating the situation, and proper actions will be taken immediately. We thank you for your patience, and again want to ensure this is not our stance. In other words, because they began worrying about the money, and suddenly this was not okay. The regional manager has also said that Scruffy Duffy's will be making a donation to Hope's Door, which is the Plano Women's Domestic Violence Shelter. So there's a happy ending, right? And there's still a couple of things in there that are, like I said, this article makes it a point of explaining that the person who made the sign was a woman. And then when Scruffy Duffy's responds on Facebook, they also point out that one of our female employees. Why the necessity to mention that the employee was female? Can you sort that out? Because I can't. Is the stupidity made worse, or is it somehow mitigated because the person who did it was female? I don't understand. If you do, let me know. Because I'm kind of licked on that. I mean, like I said, it's got a happy ending, but even if on first blush that seems funny, I like my beer like I like my violence, domestic. How does that pass the is it still funny the second time I read it test? Assuming that your brain is sufficiently tilted or twisted or looped out of reality land enough that you think it's funny the first time through. I mean, granted, I'm sure that somebody like, say, maybe that jiggling mass of drug-addicted protoplasm, Flush Flimball, I'm sure he'd think that's a laugh riot. In fact, I'm pretty darn sure he would think that is a laugh riot. Flush has long been, I mean, I can remember him telling this little, he thought it was a real knee-slapping one-liner time after time after time, in the middle of broad daylight broadcast hours. Nobody, you know, of course, he was never fined or sanctioned by the FCC for it, but he would tell this joke about what do you call gender surgery for a woman who wants to be a man, and he'd wait a minute and say, "My friends, it's called an adidectomy." Ha 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 ha! And the protoplasm would jiggle, and the cochlear implant would whatever. Well, he's still fascinated with trans people, Flush is. Ew, just ew.
Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hi, welcome to the program.
I'm here.
Tina.
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, it's your turn. Have at it.
Oh, geez, I didn't think that other person was going to talk so briefly. thanks for having me on, Rush. I really appreciate
it. You're more than welcome. It's great to have you here.
When I heard you this morning, you know, one thing that jumped right out at me was when you used the Scalia quote about gay marriage to say that this is going to lead to all kind of other implied bad things, and then you link transgenderism in, you know, getting our rights in with that. You know, that really alerted me that I wanted to talk to you.
No, wait. I was reading from Time Magazine nearly a year after the Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage, another social movement is poised to challenge deeply held cultural beliefs. It's a whole story in Time Magazine called The Transgender Tipping Point, and it is they who discuss the Scalia Supreme Court ruling and what he meant, and they say he was right. It's now doors are wide open.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that you are not, saying that transgender rights is a bad thing that conservatives should oppose.
Oh, no. I've been for trannies for a long time.
I've been for trannies for a long time. Did I suggest that you might want to get the duct tape and the tennis ball?
I don't know if you've heard otherwise.
Yeah. Well, actually, I did hear you using that term. And a lot of us do find that to be rather offensive because of the way it's been historically used.
Oh, I didn't know that. Tranny is offensive?
Yeah, it's kind of an argument. And RuPaul
I thought it was. I thought it. You know, I heard Alec Baldwin use the term. When he was in trouble because he has made a lot of homophobic comments.
Right.
And
yeah.
He wrote this big apologia that ran in one of the New York area publication. He used the term tranny as though it were hip and an inside baseball term that made him cool with the transgender.
Yeah, you know, that is kind of the minority viewpoint on it, is that we're reclaiming that word like black people use the N-word. But a lot of us fighting for our rights. We hear tranny as a joke on Two and a Half Men, and we hear tranny as a joke, as a derisive term all over the place.
Oh.
And so we don't really appreciate it. We would rather be called trans or trans people or trans men or trans women for sure.
All right. I thought it was cool and hip. You're telling me it's like the N-word, except do you all use it amongst yourselves?
in certain contexts. Like, I will use it when I'm talking about the way somebody else sees me.
Yeah.
Like, I'll say something like, they don't want a tranny working there.
Well, how do people know you're a tranny?
Well, a lot of them don't, and that certainly leads to part of the problem.
Well, thanks for using the word there, Flush. God, this is $55 million a year broadcasting. Shoot me. No, don't. Don't shoot me, please. And naturally, because, you know, as liberal progressive people, we all take our cues from Alec Baldwin, right? I mean, I've got, don't you? I've got my little Alec Baldwin morning memo. It's right there in my email. No, of course I don't. Neither do you. But that's okay. That's okay. Stand by. Because it's gonna get worse.
You know, people have this fear that they're going to get attracted to somebody who turns out to be a tranny. And one of the things about being transgender is that kind of whatever somebody's sexual preference is, you're not it. You know, gay men don't want to have anything to do with effeminate types, and straight men don't want to have anything to do with people that have got, you know, wrong plumbing or wrong history. And, you know, lesbian women are interested in certain things that just never going to be the same, no matter how much surgery you have.
Yeah.
So that definitely is a problem. People often think that I'm going around trying to trick people, and so I will often, if I'm going to a bar...
Well, what, okay.
Okay, wait. Have you already snapped the duct tape? You might want to reapply. I've got a note from Jeremy here. Double-sided duct tape and really extra-large tennis ball. What a fat effing liar. He knows damned well what he's doing. Drugged up, deaf effer. Of course he does. Nobody ever gets this much time on the Flimball show. And bless her poor heart, she's just as nervous as can be. And I don't understand anybody who thinks that there's anything to be gained by trying to reason with him or any of these other right-wing freaks. But that's okay. Tape down. Sticky side down.
So you're a transgender. What? How would you trick somebody? What are they afraid of?
They're afraid that, well, you know, again, from their perspective, they're afraid that I'm going to present as a real woman and trick them into having sex. I mean, that's what you see on Jerry Springer.
But at some
three
point,
times a week.
Okay. At some point, even if you do trick them, they're going to find out that they've been tricked and it's not going to work, right? I mean, if they think you're a guy, but you're not, at some point they're going to find out if they have, try to have sex.
Well, a lot of times people have oral sex or anal sex in the dark. And that's the kind of thing that you
oh,
see.
Oh, that's right. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, of course, Jeff Christie, Hill District, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 1970s. You didn't even think of that. Uh-uh. No, of course not. $55 million a year for that. Is it progress that this individual made it on to the jiggling lump of protoplasm's programming? Oh, God. Let's go away very quickly. Exit screaming. No, this is a rather, without a doubt, this is a thorny Thursday. My Lord, what a thorny Thursday. Let's go back to Texas for a minute. Because, of course, while the right wing have given us any number of excuses for why Elliot Rodger did what he did, it can't possibly be misogyny. It can't possibly be the fact that we live in a culture that devalues women. Oh, no, 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 no. Enter 37-year-old Aaron Aranza, whom it turns out back on April 11th is alleged to have, oh, sweet Jesus, beaten his then 14-year-old daughter with a belt. For dancing with an African-American boy. It was April 11th during a rehearsal party for the young woman's quinceañera, which is a big deal party for girls in the Latino community who are about to turn 15. And there's supposed to be, in the course of this thing, there's supposed to be a spotlight dance between the girl and a dance partner of her choosing. And the young woman chose her friend, a good friend, who happened to be, at least according to Aaron Aranza, of the wrong skin tone. The dance was canceled. The party was canceled when Aranza told guests that the party had been canceled and then shoved the young man and used the word and said, "I don't care that you're a kid." That's when he dragged his daughter back into the home and beat her with a belt, and threw her around, hurt her arm. By the way, the young woman lives with her mother, not her father. He said he would take her back to his house. Then he dragged her back outside, dragged her across the front yard. No kidding. He was arrested, but he was released on bond, of course. $20,000 bond. It's only $20,000 bond for shoving around a young man who's underage and then belt beating a not quite 15-year-old girl. Okay, Texas Betsy tells me quinceañeras are primarily in the Mexican-American community, not so much out of the South American or, I guess, Caribbean cultures. Thank you. Is that more of those traditional family values? Yeah. Haven't had enough yet? Well, stories like this will run the entire Horn family commune, right away, but we've got to get, look, this is America. Okay? Get it. This is America. These are not isolated incidents. It's like last night, the story of the 3-year-old boy that blew away his 18-month-old baby brother. And the reporter on the Arizona TV station said, a crime scene surrounds the place where the unthinkable happened. None of this is unthinkable. This is absolutely thinkable in America. Now, it might be unthinkable in a civilized country like Sweden or Denmark or Norway or Finland or Germany or France or any of a number of other countries. It is not unthinkable here. How long ago was it that we had the story of the Texas judge who beat the bejesus out of his daughter for what? Downloading something wrong. And then before that, There was. Do you remember the North Carolina man from a couple of years back, who proudly videotaped himself smashing his daughter's laptop to bits? And no, he shot it. He shot it with his heroic penis extension Freedom Protectin' shooting gun. Yeah, that's what it was. Let's have a run over to North Carolina. In North Carolina, a young woman, a teenager, is trying to heal, trying to improve, if you will, from traumatic brain injuries. Where did the traumatic brain injuries come from? Well, dear God, she was severely beaten this past Friday night, almost a week ago. And almost a week later, she has opened her eyes. Yay. That happened Wednesday, yesterday, and she has made speaking noises at her friends and her family. That's good. Claudine Williams, a friend of the young woman, said, Hannah opened her eyes today and was hoarsely talking to Sonny and I. She told us that she loves us and she's happy to see us. She's a little confused, but is flashing us bright smiles. The left side of her body's still not moving like the doctors would like, but it will get there, hopefully. This is in Wilmington, North Carolina. Hannah had a boyfriend. Hannah's boyfriend's name is Michael Hutton. He's 18 years old. Michael Hutton is now facing attempted first-degree murder charges. He's also facing charges of kidnapping and multiple assault charges. He may wind up having to do life without parole because, yeah, Hannah Conaway, 17 years old, last Friday night, was teasing him, giving him a little bit of grief or whatever, because he was having a hard time untangling fishing line. No, you heard that right. Untangling fishing line. I don't know what the teasing was like. What? Come on, you're going to take all night doing that? Who knows? Claudine Williams, referenced in the news story I just shared with you, said he got angry because he couldn't untangle fishing line. He was blaming her for some things like having snarky remarks to things he was saying, and then it just escalated and kept on going. And what she means by kept on going is that he started beating her and beat her and beat her. And then he dragged her across the ground of the yard. And once he got done dragging her, he started choking her. Claudine Williams said, I keep on hearing her screaming, and I keep on hearing all the sounds, and it's just awful. I ran around the front door. I tried to get in. All the doors were locked. It was just awful. Emergency response crews finally showed up, and that's when they found young Miss Conaway lying unconscious in the front yard. That's when she was evac'd to an area hospital for emergency brain surgery. high school senior. She had planned to attend the University of Hawaii next year. She was going to go there and study education. Now, again, duct tape, tennis ball. You know how the guy who was arrested for whipping his he's not quite 15-year-old daughter with a belt for dancing with a black kid. You know, remember he was released on $20,000 bail, and that was down in Texas. Well, over in North Carolina, after you've been charged with assault on a female and assault inflicting serious bodily injury and attempted murder, they let you out on $6,000 bond. But then they arrested him on some more charges, and a higher bond was imposed. Oh, by the way, the very first story of the evening there at the Atomic Grill, after the skeevy remark about showing more skin, the management there at the restaurant for a number of days had to provide an escort to one particular waitress to and from her car, because you never know when the skeevy guy who wants to see more skin is just going to take matters into his own hand and get all rapey, because that's the kind of country we have. We have a rape country, a rape culture. We have a beat a girl until she has brain injury and cannot move the left side of her body culture. We have a beat a 14-year-old little girl with a belt culture. The defense in the North Carolina case of young Mr. Hutton has already gone into damage control mode. Defense attorney said Hutton had a history of seizures, which they said might have combined with alcohol to trigger the attack. Really? Really? Somebody having a seizure can beat and strangle and drag another human being around and cause such profound brain injury that the victim winds up unable to move the left side of her body? According to WNCN-TV, an ex-girlfriend of Hutton's went to the Tuesday court appearance. That's where he entered the not guilty plea. She'd been in a relationship with the 18-year-old for 5 years, so, you know, since he was 13 or 12 even. The young woman said, "He's not a good guy. I've forgiven him. I've forgiven him. Like I said, I'm a Christian 100%. Don't! I have no grudge against him or his family, but I feel for the people he put after me after I left, after I walked away." Yeah, Texas Betsy pointing out, "My seizures just exhaust me." Well, I've never known anybody to have a seizure. I mean, have a seizure and start attacking someone and causing traumatic brain injury. I mean, you've got to be exercising some agency, don't you, in order to strangle somebody and cut off the blood supply to their brain. All this forgiveness BS. I mean, I'm a Christian, 100%. I forgive him. Well, maybe if you hadn't forgiven him. Oh, well. This is just America. This is the country we live in. Story after story after story after story. This is the country we live in. Check in the email box. My God, the spam rolls in from these right-wing PR hacks. Ugh. Marty says, Mr. Aranza is very lucky that the young man is not my son, my brother, my nephew, or cousin. Get the point? Because no weapon he had would stop me from visiting back a few times over onto him what he did to that boy and what he, and presumably what he did to his daughter. Yeah. Man. Is this, okay, let's try to be a little bit intellectual about this. I see all of these stories, and I see a country coming apart at the seams. No one news story can be the story. But by the same token, can there get to the point, can it get to the point where there are enough of these stories that is there a quantum of these things that let us understand that this is not a good country? And I don't say that. I don't say that with any pride. I don't say that with any joy. But is one not actively denying reality when on any given day there are there's story after story after story like this? And frankly, if we really wanted to go deep on this, we probably couldn't get through all the stories if we had some way of aggregating them. We couldn't get through all the stories if we in a 3-hour program. No way, just couldn't. Haley, writing from Arkansas. Bob, the Jeff Christie comment on Limbaugh's trans caller was pure gold. Glory call. I think the former Jeff Christie was having flashbacks to possible DL encounters with trans women. There are so-called straight men who have an attraction to transgender women and or gender variant males at birth that present effeminately, but such folks harboring such attractions often cause these macho males to behave badly and therefore engage in trans-shaming trans women and their allies. The term tranny is a slur and not generally regarded as a term of endearment. I didn't think so. No. Oh, Irish Dave's off and running this evening. Has Air Marshal Rush ordered up air cover from the Limp Waffle? After all, he said, pick your dance partner like you pick your cotton, white. It's okay, since that is not original with him. He heard it from the Blah Boy on his staff. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, you get the idea. By the way, we got off to a running start. A reminder: we are out of the hole for the time being, and we need to only raise $130 more dollars this evening to keep up with our fundraising as we move toward the end of March, which is a big deal. That's thanks to Barry, and then thanks to Asa, who got stuff rolling. If you'd like to jump in alongside them, it would be much appreciated. And well, it'll make things a little easier to get going in June. Back into the swamp. F me, back into the swamp. Let's go. Well, hey, Haley wrote from Arkansas. Let's do an Arkansas story. Yeah, Fort Smith, Arkansas. Formerly the home of the hanging judge. Judge Parker, wasn't it? Yeah. Well, I guess this has a kind of a happy ending because the guy who did what he did at least had the common decency to resign because he was a member of the police department. It was this past Wednesday morning when Naaman Adcock, that's really his name, 40 years old, from the Fort Smith Police Department, he turned in his badge and his gun and his bullet after he was charged with suspicion of assault with a deadly weapon, possession of a firearm while intoxicated, reckless conduct with a firearm, felonious pointing of a firearm, and child endangerment. Now, this story has a happy ending because nobody's dead. Repeat, nobody's dead. In this case, it turns out Naaman Adcock apparently got himself liquored up and then, a young woman, little girl, 12 years old, ran to a neighbor's house to call 911 because stepdaddy had been drinking kind of hard. And he'd been screaming at mama while he's holding a gun. And then he said, "Damn, this doesn't have any bullets." And once he declared it didn't have any bullets, he pointed the muzzle of the gun at the head of the 12-year-old's 5-year-old baby brother and said, "You know what I'd do? I'd blow this boy's Jewish brains out." Then, the little girl said she actually heard 4 gunshots. Yeah, really. And that's when his brother officers showed up and demanded that he, and he came to the door, Adcock did, with a pistol drawn and pointed at the officers. Now, you want to talk about some white male privilege? I got your white male privilege right here. Now, follow with me. Did you catch that part? Drunk white dude, 40 years old, shows up, opens the door with a loaded pistol pointed at the cops. You know what the cops did? You know what the deputies did? She drew her weapon and advised Officer Adcock to drop his. At which point, Adcock waved it around a bit and said, "What? Really? You going to shoot me?" And then he put the gun down, and they didn't shoot him. That is right there. Wow, what a tale of white male privilege. Because, I mean, let's replay that with any other skin tone on the planet. Sheriff's deputies show up. Shots have been reported fired. Black guy goes to the door, answers the door with pistol in hand, pointed at the deputies. What happens? You know what happens. Suicide by cop. Hispanic guy opens the door after reports of shots fired, opens the door, waves a pistol, points it at the cops. What happens? Suicide by cop. Asian guy, same thing. Pick a nationality, pick an ethnicity. I would say in 9 out of 10 circumstances, dead. White guy who has already been reported as having pointed a gun at a 5-year-old's head and threatening to blow his Jewish brains out, who then fires 4 rounds into the walls of his trailer, whose wife and stepchildren have fled. Well, the sheriffs just tell him to put the gun down. By the way, as they took him into custody after not killing him, the sheriff's department did go through the house and confiscated some nine, count them, nine weapons. Yeah. And then in what is one of the saddest and sorriest parts of domestic violence. Hey, remember the story? I like my beer like I like my violence. Domestic. Yeah. Tabitha Adcock, his wife, the mother of the five-year-old boy whom Mr. Adcock said he, whose Jewish brains he said he would blow right out of his noggin, she repeatedly changed her story to the sheriff's deputies because she said she didn't want him to lose his job with the police department. Yeah. If tomorrow all the stuff I got had went and disappeared, thank God for America. Yeah. Jeremy's with me on this. Anything other than a white guy and it's bang, bang, put down the gun. Right. See why we call it Thorn in the Side Thursday? Sorry, Texas Betsy. Texas Betsy says I'm about to run screaming from the room. Hey, I'm sitting here relating these accounts. I don't get to run screaming. And you know what? And I understand the impulse, but the fact of the matter is, you might run from the room, but you can't run from America. This can happen anywhere at any time. And if you don't think that to one degree or another, a domestic violence, misogynistic rape culture doesn't have ties to the gun culture, study that a little harder, why don't you? What does Naaman Adcock point at the five-year-old's head if we don't just about expect every human being in this country to be all gunned up? Hmm? Yeah. Well, geez, at least the guy in North Carolina and the guy in Texas, at least they didn't use guns. Do we put that in the win column then? I don't know. But again, the story itself is simply presented as being a story of a guy who pointed a gun at a five-year-old's head. I think the lead got buried. I think it should be headlined, "White guy waves gun at deputies is not blown away for doing so." Yeah. See. Okay. Jeremy's there. This reminds me of the young African-American male in New York City a few years back that was shot 75 times while reaching for his wallet in a dark hallway. He died with his wallet in his hand. Yeah, see? I mean, this wasn't even, he wasn't even reaching for anything. Adcock was. He had the gun out. It was loaded. He was pointing it at the sheriff's deputies. And somehow or another, nobody managed to squeeze off around. And I'm not saying they should have. Irish Dave asking, isn't this an example, on the other hand, isn't this an example of persecution? Naaman Adcock was denied the right to suicide by cop. Wowzer. You see how this all works? Now that's Texas, North Carolina, Arkansas, Arizona last night. We're coming up on the end of the first hour, so we'll save the Florida story. West Virginia, where we leave reviews saying, that waitress is pretty. I'd like to see a little more skin. Yeah, Irish Dave gets it. It seems like these stories are like weather reports. Enough of them, and we're talking climate of violence and rape and such as that. That's perfect, Dave. That is just perfect. And I'm not trying to depress anybody. I sit here and do the show prep. I read all this stuff. I might as well share it. What kind of Pollyanna? Well, what kind of not reality based community would we be if we just said, oh no, I mean, these are isolated incidents. I mean, sometimes people just go bad. You know, we could get all Anne Frank and say, despite it all, I still think that people are basically good. Well, maybe that's true. But when you have an overall culture that devalues women, that says that women are possessions, when the single largest Protestant denomination in the United States says that it is the job of women to submit to their husbands and to shut up in church, well, just exactly where are we going? When businesses... When it's deemed heroic that a business simply asks people not to carry openly loaded firearms into their restaurant, God damn! Oh well, let's take a break. Hey, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. That means that we have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. That's always, well, I'm always happy to announce that. And, of course, a reminder that thanks to our buddy Psychoticus, you can now reach the program. You can reach into the Skype account via a regular phone number. That would be 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. I still have it written on a card here because for some reason or another I haven't memorized it yet. I will. Oh, I will. Of course, email always comes into Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID @gmail.com. And you can reach @BobKincaid on Twitter and Bob Kincaid on the Facebook. Oh, we got plenty of we got plenty to work with here this evening. Let's see, what are we going to do here? All right. Yeah, we'll take a break. We'll come back and do the Green News Report and then get to your calls, your observations, however you want to do this. This is Conversation Radio. I'm not driving this bus. You are. Oh, yeah, then, right, and it's not just America. Asa reminds me. Let's see, pregnant Pakistani woman stoned to death by her family. Took place outside the courthouse. The woman was met by a whole bunch of her family members, all carrying bricks, and they bashed her to death. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Texas Betsy pointing out. No, Bob. All these stories, it's mental illness. It's not about the guns. Because it can never be about the guns, right? Yeah, I think Betsy's being a little on the snarky side. Okay, so break time's here. This is the horn. Listener-supported Conversation Radio. Gosh, only $130 away from meeting our fundraising goal and getting out of the hole. Thanks very much, very much, one and all. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Headed woman, one who'll take me for myself. And if I find my hard-headed woman, I won't need nobody else. No, no, no. I'm looking for a hard-headed woman, headed woman. One who'll make me do my best. And if I find my hard-headed woman, I know the rest of my life will be blessed. Yes, 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 yeah, yeah. I know a lot of fancy dancers, people who can glide you on the floor, oh, oh. They move so smooth but have no answers, oh, 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 oh. When you ask what you come here for,
I don't know
why.
sparks fly from the fingertips. Echo voices in the night. She's a restless spirit on an endless flight. Ooh, witchy woman, see how high she flies. Ooh, witchy woman, she got the moon in her eyes. She held me spellbound in the night. Ooh, dancing shadows and firelight. Crazy laughter in another room. And she drove herself to madness.
It's Thursday, May 29, 2014.
A whole lot of our political leaders deny that it's taking place.
Obama ups the rhetoric on global warming.
I'm not qualified to debate the science over climate change.
But Speaker Boehner knows pollution regulations are bad. Majority of Americans support reducing emissions. A victory for fossil fuels over clean energy in Ohio. Plus,
solar freaking roadways.
That's right, solar freaking roadways.
All of that and a whole lot freaking more. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 freaking minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Climate change is real.
Thank you, CNN, for finally saying it out loud.
But for many reasons, certain people keep debating this issue.
Because you keep putting on fake climate change debates.
This is CNN.
Whatever. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, let me put this into as stark terms as possible. There is no debate about global warming. It's happening. The science is quite clear. It's not a hoax. It's not a scam to line Al Gore's pockets. The only people who dispute the science are those who are looking out for the economic interests of the fossil fuel companies. Period. Full stop. That's all this is. There is no debate.
That's right. And yet we continue to hear it on our public airwaves and through the corporate mainstream media.
Correct. Of course, the corporate mainstream media relies on those fossil fuel interests. They buy a lot of commercial ad time, and they play along with the nonsense, with the politicians who are protecting the economic interests of a very few, by the way, not of the entire economy, they'll tell you they are, but the economy of just this handful of people who run the oil, coal, and gas industry. Period.
Yep. And one politician who is not playing along is President Obama.
Well, sort of, but I take your point.
President Obama is upping the rhetoric on climate change action, warning graduating cadets at West Point Academy this week that as future military leaders, they will be called on to deal with the global security impacts.
That spirit of cooperation needs to energize the global effort to combat climate change, a creeping national security crisis that will help shape your time in uniform as we are called on to respond to refugee flows and natural disasters and conflicts over water and food.
And President Obama is taking executive action. He'll soon announce new emission standards for existing coal-fired power plants, the first ever requiring power plant owners to reduce their carbon dioxide emissions that cause global warming. He's bypassing the climate science-denying Republicans and oil and coal state Democrats in Congress, where all legislation goes to die. The higher standards have not yet been released, but the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the fossil fuel industry are already attacking them unseen, with an assist from Republican House Speaker John Boehner.
I'm not qualified to debate the science over climate change, but I am astute enough to understand that every proposal that has come out of this administration to deal with climate change involves hurting our economy and killing American jobs.
And it doesn't kill American jobs. Only someone who is interested in protecting the fossil fuel industry, period, someone who doesn't give a damn about the economy or the country or the planet, would even say such a thing, but that's Speaker Boehner, and he represents the entirety of the right side of the aisle.
Decades of economic data prove that pollution standards actually lower electricity bills over time and, most importantly, generate jobs by unleashing innovation, forcing polluting industries to invest in cleaning up their operations.
Of course, it's good for the economy. It's not good for the fossil fuel industry.
And polls overwhelmingly show that Americans strongly support and want limits on carbon emissions by a 2-to-1 margin, even when it increases the cost of electricity. Meanwhile, in Ohio, the fossil fuel industry's multi-million dollar campaign to undermine competition from the renewable energy industry scored a victory this week. They convinced state legislators in Ohio to halt the state's renewable energy standard. That requires Ohio power plants to generate a portion of their energy from non-polluting renewable energy sources. But they're going to stop and study whether Ohioans deserve cleaner air.
Huh. Isn't Speaker Boehner from Ohio?
Yes, he is.
Go figure.
Finally,
solar freaking roadways.
What are they?
They're solar freaking roadways. What do they want from me?
That's the hilarious must-see video explaining solar roadways, literally paving our roads with energy-generating solar panels.
It's technology that replaces all roadways, parking lots, sidewalks, driveways, tarmacs, bike paths, and outdoor recreation surfaces with solar panels. And not just lifeless, boring solar panels. Smart, microprocessing, interlocking, hexagonal solar unit.
The Idaho inventors have already received grants from the Department of Energy and the Department of Transportation. They've got a huge Indiegogo campaign for going into production. Check out the hilarious video at our website, greennews.bradblog.com.
So this is really cool. Where we've got roads in this country, we just replace them with solar panels, power the entire nation.
Yeah, there are issues with costs and logistics, but it is totally doable.
Totally doable. And, of course, Speaker Boehner will be totally against it. All this free energy, we can't have it. For much more on that and the stories we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation. We really need you to help us stay on your public airwaves. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
See, that's part of the reason I love the Green News Report, because I'm kind of a production nerd, and I know how much effort it takes to put all of that together in such an entertaining format. Really, Ease On Down the Road, that's just past, that's miles past creative. Hi, this is The Horn, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid, you know that. Want to send out thanks to Anthony. We're now even closer to reaching our goal. We are at $124.45 from meeting our goal, and we've got a call in on the line, 304-574-8178. Before I go to the call, let me just explain a little bit more. Remember, I can't take multiple calls, so if one calls on, you got to wait your turn, because I can't put anybody on hold. Secondly, if there's music playing or something that's not me, then I can't take your call then either because it's coming over the same channel and we're, you know, it's a fairly pared down system we're running here. But you'll notice that for the first time in years of doing this, we've gotten through. How about that? We haven't missed a broadcast due to technical difficulties in the entire time that Ferg and I have been up here. How about that's cool, huh? So to the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
Oh, just enjoying one of those Louisiana thunderstorms.
Nice.
On the back porch. I'm enjoying your show. I missed that part. You're talking about the guy who got, I guess he got shot by a cop.
He was a cop who was not shot by a cop. He came out and waved a gun at the cops, and the cops didn't shoot him dead, which they otherwise would have done had he not been so white.
Well, you said something about him he was faking a seizure.
Oh no, that was a different story. No, he wasn't. No. The defense attorney says he's got a history of seizures. There was no gunplay in that story. That was just good old garden variety, hateful, nasty violence.
Because, I mean, the thing about I do get some Jesus and all the sky spooks. I had brain surgery when I was young. Not once, but
only
twice.
Only because God loves you, Jim.
Huh?
Only because God loves you.
Yeah, no. there's always a quid pro quo with surgery and brain surgery in particular. And at the second brain surgery, I had seizures, but medicine controls it now. But the thing about a seizure, which is a grand mal, you can't. I don't see how you fake it because, I mean, you kind of like,
you're here, you're talking about it, Jim. Let me just ask you, have you ever had a surgery, have you ever had a seizure that caused you to beat a woman to the point that she's paralyzed on her left side, strangle her and give her head injuries and drag her across the yard? Because I've never heard of anybody having a seizure like that.
Not the ones I've unfortunately I haven't had. Well, one's too many, but I've had you lose total control of your body, and then you get like what I call like a 2-minute warning where you can kind of tell it's coming, and then I haven't had one in four years or whatever, but yeah, because I take my medication, but you just lay on the floor. You can't move too well once the seizure starts kicking in. You know, you can't do anything. You know, and your hands get numb, and it varies a little bit. But that's ridiculous. I mean, maybe there's different kinds. That's the only thing I can be.
No, I don't think. No, see, I don't think this was a seizure. I think this kid, at least according to his girlfriend of 5 years. It would appear that he's just really a not nice person.
Right. Well, maybe it's a seizure of stupidity.
Hey, Jim, whatever you've got turned up in the background, could you turn it down? It makes it kind of hard to hear.
Okay.
Yeah, much better.
Yeah, so that's... That sounds like total BS to me, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. If you're a defense attorney, I guess you're grabbing for straws, especially from what you told me a little bit. I heard at the end of when I turned on the radio, they're just looking for any defense. I guess that's what they...
Well, when you've got the law, you pound on the law. When you've got the facts, you pound on the facts. When you got neither, you pound on the table.
Yep. So, what was it you talking about the other day? I just wanted to touch on it real quick. The I'll get back to you on that. I can't think of it right now.
No worries. No worries, Jim.
I'll let another call get through. But that's my story as far as seizures go. I don't see how you could even fake it at all. I mean, you could fall on the ground, but I mean, even then, you.
Yeah, you seldom grab somebody by the neck and choke the life out of them on the way.
And also what happens, I mean, like I said, I haven't had one in 4 years or 3 years, whatever it was, but you just black out and you're out for, I don't know, 5-10 minutes or, you know, so that's.
Yeah, but in the time that you're blacked out, you're not sitting there playing Parcheesi or beating up a 17-year-old girl.
No.
I mean, you're kind of out of it. I mean, you're. Not particularly functional.
No. It's they're not fun, contrary to popular belief. So, all right. I'll let you go. Let another call get through.
All right, Jim. Or, you have yourself a good evening. I appreciate it. Take care.
All right.
All right, bye now. Calling from Louisiana, Stan. That's our buddy. That's our buddy, Jim. No, just remember, if there's one person on the line, I can't take another call until that person is off the line. The number 304-574-8178. Of course, it's awfully easy to reach the program Skype to Skype, and that's just Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. We've got Jeremy calling from Vermont. Hey, Jeremy. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bob.
What's happening?
Well, I just called in to give my nightly briefing on the last night of torture and punishment last night.
Oh, mercifully, it's over, isn't it?
Yeah, they only talked about the Holocaust for, I think, a combined 2 to 3 minutes. The rest of it focused on Churchill, MacArthur being a war god. Patton, they did cover Patton slapping the guy who was suffering from shell shock. I thought that was very interesting. And they poo-pooed what he did, saying back then they didn't really know what basically PTSD was. So there was an uproar that he did it after it was published in the paper because some reporter mentioned it. So that was interesting. But like I said, they only covered the Holocaust for about 3 minutes. And that was when Patton discovered it, that actually the rumors were true. They didn't even really talk about Hitler. I think maybe once in a 30-second clip, the guy that was playing Hitler in a bad German-English accent said, "It's the final solution." But other than that, they never explained what was going on.
They just took it as read.
Yeah, exactly. They take it as everyone knows what this is, and we shouldn't really explain it. But last night, it did get inevitably worse. And we had Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Colin Powell explaining Nazis and fascism and how him and Mussolini were the worst people in the world. And they stormed into different countries and took over countries and tried to tell them what to do with force and terror and bombing. And just kind of sat there nodding my head like, yep, that did happen, but... these three people, of all the people in the world, they could choose.
Well, what do you say? I mean, when you're going to three bona fide war criminals, oh Jesus! I mean, Cheney, Rumsfeld, ouch.
They also had the former Secretary of State. The guy who just stepped down and went to the CIA, I can't think of his name. I want to say he looks Hispanic, has glasses, darker skin. I could be totally off.
Yeah, that's not. I'll have to have some help there.
I can't think what his name is.
That's
he
okay.
He was on there too.
Somebody will figure it out in the chat room.
It wasn't the Secretary of State. I'm sorry. It was He was on 60 Minutes. He's part of the military. Something I can't think of his name. It doesn't really matter. But he was on there, and he was probably the only guy who had character and grace only because he was serving under Obama and wasn't really part of these war of choice, shall we say.
Oh, Leon Panetta?
Yes, Leon Panetta, yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, he was on there, and like I said, he was the only one that maybe had half a character other than some of the historians who I recognize their voices, but not their names or their faces. But I shoved it down and finally watched it, but I did find it interesting how they poo-pooed Patton for slapping a soldier with PTSD back then, but really kind of just paved over the whole Holocaust happening.
Yeah, I just got an email from Jim. He says, Patton slapping, yes, they did cover it and elaborated upon it in his removal from command. I saw it too.
Right, I'm sure Jim noticed too that they very, very, very much paid for the Holocaust. Like I said, it was between 3 and 5 minutes in total. It was all basically surrounding Patton finding the Holocaust camp, like Auschwitz. He found that one and a couple of others, but never really explained what happened. And the police, they did mention the police rounding up, the secret police rounding up people of not liked by Hitler. So homosexuals, transgendered, you name it. They did mention that for about 10 seconds. But it was more focused on all these madmen in World War I and II.
I'm glad I didn't waste any of the... Thank you for taking one for the team, Jeremy, but I am. I'm glad I didn't waste any of the finite time of my existence on it.
Oh, and you were interested in what they're going to do for D-Day.
Oh, no.
No, they're not making a movie out of it. Luckily, we're going to be spared that. They have found footage, such as they found for World War II in color and World War I, and whatever they did. They found stuff from D-Day itself, the landing in Normandy, and are going to present this footage as shown by the press that were filming it. It was never aired on TV in newly furnished HD restoration.
Well, that'll be novel. That'll be interesting if they don't bring in Dick Cheney to explain why Obama was so weak that it was a miracle we won, that we succeeded at D-Day. You know, he declared that today. Barack Obama may be the weakest president in American history.
You brought up a good point there. Another thing about that, I'm sure Jim will notice this too, since he followed the show along with me in horror. But they mentioned how the Americans won World War II in Europe and in the Philippines. Didn't really cover the whole, you know, Russians giving up 50 million of the people on the Western Front. Never said a fucking word about that.
Oh, no. Well, why would you?
Right. But there is one more thing.
Understand, Jeremy, they're not selling ads over there. You're not going to sell any more car insurance or whatever other silly crap that they're running in the breaks there. You know, why mention somebody that's not going to buy the stuff that this thing is entirely a vehicle for hustling in the first place?
I know, but this is the History Channel. Can we at least have a little bit of accuracy in what sides really won World War II and where the battle really was defined and where Hitler really made mistakes? But the only other thing I can see in the future that does vaguely interest me on there, because I have a flowing knowledge of him, is on Labor Day, why of all days that day, they're going to premiere a 2-hour or a 3-night miniseries on Harry Houdini. Like I said, I have a passing knowledge of some of the things he's done. Last summer, my girlfriend and I went to Rhode Island, and I forget where exactly we went. It was Salem. And Houdini performed a lot of time in Salem in a road theater, I guess, there back in the turn of the century. And one night, he took the crowd up from about a block walk up, about 100 people up to the jail, knocked on the door and told the jailer in there, he said, put me in your best handcuffs and put me in a cell and I'll be out here in 5 minutes. So the guy looked at him and laughed and said, oh, that's not possible, Harry. We have these brand new handcuffs and these shackles. Nothing, you know, you couldn't do anything. So the sheriff took him inside, stripped him down, put him in a cell, shackled him in the cell, closed the cell, closed the cell block door, went outside. In about 3 minutes and 30 seconds, Houdini appeared at the upstairs door, buck naked, attached to his cellmate. Who was in a cell opposite of him, not even with him. So I do have a passing knowledge of some of the stuff he's done. I like to see how they portray that. But again, I won't be shocked if they whitewash some of it and try to play it down.
Well, it's the History Channel. They will get some portion of it or you know, anything all wrong because they're the History Channel. It's what they do.
Monstrably wrong, right, yeah. So that was my contribution for the night. I just thought I filled it out an hour, two or three, whatever it was, and it turned out to be a real shit fest in the end in my eyes.
All right, well, I appreciate it. Thank you, Jeremy.
Yep, no problem.
All right, you have a good evening. And
you too.
Yeah, don't put away the tennis ball and duct tape yet.
Oh, good. Thanks for the warning.
Okay. Just thought you'd want to know. Later. That's our buddy Jeremy calling from Vermont. I've given up. I mean, I've given up on about 99% of television. There's a little bit out there that's worth a damn, but not a lot. Really interesting email coming in from our buddy Steve in China. He says, he writes, it is certainly no stretch. Subject line of this email is black and blue. It is certainly no stretch to say that these violent and irrational acts constitute, you know, talking about what we talked about in the first hour of the program, that these violent and irrational acts constitute issues of mental health rather than only of common legal interpretation. Your typical police officer is not expected to make fine distinctions between someone's behavior and their actions, except insofar as that behavior results in an act that is, by the book, against the law. But that officer is supposed to transport someone to the nearest mental health facility if she reasonably suspects that behavior to be quote-unquote crazy. My point being that outside of competent medical determination, a great deal of the behaviors that American culture considers normal are most assuredly abnormal. We don't stone our wives and daughters to death for alleged acts of sexual infidelity, but neither is it acceptable to stand by and watch a father drag his daughter screaming across the lawn, twisting her arm into a knot, all the while raving that he is not going to see her having a good time with one of those colors of people. That is effing insane. Not just racist or misogynistic or Irish-tempered. If not, we'd just as well converse reasonably with the tinfoil hat guy and his psychic cat. Regards, Steve in China. There's a horrible burden play. And, do you remember, the guy, the Florida cop who thought the guy was drunk, but it turned out he was dying of a stroke? What was that, Florida? Yeah. It's a lot of this is gut check stuff, but we do carry privilege with us all over the place. The guy in Arkansas is proof. I mean, I'm convinced had the man been of color, he would have been, because, you know, it's not just that he's got a gun in his hand. The story reported he had it pointed at the sheriff's deputies. But, you know, they probably recognized him. He's from the Fort Smith Police Force, so let's not blow him away right away. But if you're unrecognized, the gun becomes the determining factor. Whether sane or insane, there's a gun pointed at officers. You know, goodbye gun-pointing guy. You see what I mean? Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
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 Yeah, hello.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
I'm good, Jim. How about you?
Pretty good. First caller, I have witnessed those seizures, and I've held someone down who's had them. And I can tell you one thing, it's no picnic.
No. No.
Not even in any way. And this is a family member. So I can certainly empathize with your first caller and the horror that people have of not knowing when these things will come.
Sure.
I mean, you're talking about impedance of normal function, driving, stuff like that, and things of that nature. I remember the drug they used to give, it was called Mycelene, which was supposed to be an anti-convulsive agent, but it can certainly determine the course of your life.
Sure.
And pursuant to the thing about the thing last night, I watched it too. Patton went into Buchenwald eventually, but as far as Auschwitz-Birkenau is concerned, the Soviet allies found those. And they did have quite a bit to say about Stalin. And they had no good things to say about Stalin, saying that he was no better than Hitler, which is, I've always held to be true, because he probably killed more people than Hitler ever thought about killing. And even before he died in 1953/4, whenever it was, he was planning another great purge. So, I mean, as far as the two are concerned, Stalin probably, even though he was our ally, and it did mention very, very specifically how many millions of people the Soviets lost. And they lost, oh God, some say 20 million people, some say 26. But you know, these were all placed on, what can I say? They were made out in terms of nameless numbers on lists that were carelessly mislaid. To quote Yev Graf and Dr. Zhivago. Well, that's the way it was. And it was the Russians, in spite of their leadership and the necessity of what they had to do, who fought the greater part of World War II. They really did. Can one only imagine what would have happened if we had not had them? Of every 8 German soldier killed, 7 were killed by the Russians. And that's something I'll never forget. And people in Leningrad during the siege of the 900 days, in 3 days, lost more people than we ever did on D-Day. Through starvation, cold, and being constantly shelled until they finally broke that siege. If you want to reference it, Harrison Salisbury, the 900 days. There's another book by Alexander Wirth on the siege of Leningrad, a truly hero city.
Well, what took me aback, Jim, and I did not see the thing, but the idea that Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney would be called upon as experts to comment on that history.
Well, they are experts. Think about
well, they're, I mean, they're not experts on the history of the Second World War. They're experts,
no, but they're
on,
experts
on war crimes.
They're experts on those types of actions. I guess maybe that's the reason they were called. That's the way I took it. You know, they weren't taking them as any type of proponent agent or whatever, but they are proponent agents for a lot of people who aren't here anymore. And
yeah, about a million Iraqis.
Well, yeah. But nonetheless, that's exactly the way they showed it. And there were parts of it that I didn't think were too hot. But nonetheless, as far as the scenic portrayals, they used a lot of stuff from all that movie from Tom Cruise about the assassination attempt on Hitler.
Oh, Valkyrie?
Uh-huh. They did that. And, of course, as far as Hitler's mountain retreat, they had it look like a more like the castle at Neuschwanstein than they did the Berghof. But, I mean, you know, I thought at least they could show Hitler's picture window. At least that was nice to look through. But nonetheless, it had a lot of faults and stuff like that. But a lot of it was, you know, very true. And I was particularly impressed upon their emphasis upon Stalin and his, well, his tactics and strategies that cost a number of people a number of lives.
Well, apparently this book that I mentioned in conversation with Bill last night, The Sleepwalkers,
right,
is getting quite a bit of discussion, and it's being read by a lot of important people. The article I read yesterday said that Angela Merkel has read it. I think I probably need to get my hands on it. Although for my part, the entire world would do well just to go back and read Barbara Tuchman.
Well, I have ordered that book, and you know, there's one thing about the German business community and the Anglo-German Naval League and certain other things before the First World War. And I talked about it before, called the Fritz Fischer thesis, which basically outlines Wilhelmine Germany's aims in that war. And they were galvanized in great part by the German business community. And, you know, the Kaiser was sort of a guy who came into this world with one arm half pulled out of the socket. He never got over that impedance. And he could be a pretty nasty person to deal with, particularly if you shook hands with him, because he always wore these big rings on his right hand, or whichever hand was deformed, was not deformed. And it would practically draw blood from the person with whom he was shaking hands. But on the other hand, when he was in his right mind, so to speak, or in a better think state, he was very, very progressive as far as industry, as far as worker conditions and things of that nature are concerned. And so Kaiser Bill, even though he has been much maligned by a lot of people, wasn't all bad.
Remind me, Jim, where did he live out his days after the close of the First World War?
He was exiled in Holland, died in 1940.
Wow.
Yep, they sent him to Holland, and there he lived. And I've seen motion pictures of him chopping wood with his good arm and stuff like that. And he, basically was the end of the Hohenzollern, and that was it.
Surprised Holland would have him.
Sir?
I'm surprised Holland would have him.
Well, yeah, that's where he did end up. I mean, Holland's taken a lot of exiles. I mean, they took Maximilian's ex-wife, Carlotta. Remember her?
Yeah.
That poor woman was as mad as I had her before she died. Died in 1926. And even when they would let her out of the castle to go around the boat, the moat of the castle in the boat, she would go back and she said, "Today we leave for Mexico."
Mm.
So that's another example of the misplacement by the Habsburgs of trying to send another. Well, it wasn't the Habsburgs. It was the Emperor of France, Napoleon III, second or whatever his name was, who
third wasn't it?
Who sponsored that
misadventure
imposition of European rule upon Mexico.
Right, and of course Cinco de Mayo represents the day when Mexican forces beat back the forces of Maximilian.
But anyways,
and now it's just been transformed into a holiday where everybody drinks cheap tequila.
Yep, exactly. But even in his own way, Maximilian was not a very bloody person at all. I'm sure he wished he had stayed at his beautiful castle at Miramar. I don't know if you've ever been to the Adriatic coast, but he did have a beautiful place there. And I think he and his wife would have been much happier if they had remained on the opposite shore. But unfortunately, Maximilian made his end. I think he said before they shot him, "It's a beautiful day to die on such a day as this." I'm paraphrasing there.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to the thing with the History Channel, yeah, they have their ups and downs, but they did very much give credit to the Russian people and not Stalin. Because, I mean, when Hitler invaded Stalin on 22nd June of 1941, Stalin was incapacitated totally. I mean, he wouldn't even come out of his DACA until the first week in July, and during his first speech was so nervous that part of it was garbled, number one, because he never spoke Russian really with the correct accent, but nobody bothered to tell him that, but number two, he was drinking so much water. But he did manage to, I guess, recover his leadership. As a matter of fact, when the boys, his leadership came to see him, right after the invasion, he thought they were coming to take him out.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. He was that scared because they knew that he and Molotov, by signing that agreement thing with Hitler, well, they'd bought time. They had to buy time. Because in the 1930s, late 1930s, Stalin had killed all of the Soviet leadership. And the thing about it was, the NKVD under Stalin, his secret police, before the invasion, back when they were so-called friends, I mean, Germany trained their divisions in Stalin or in Russia before the Second
right,
World War.
Right, because of the agreement over the troop strengths and you know how many tanks. Right.
Well, it was the Treaty of Rapallo, and Germany wasn't allowed to have anything, so the Russians allowed them to train there. But nonetheless, it was always Hitler's ambition to find a place in the east for his people to settle, and Stalin was still shocked by the fact that Hitler invaded when he did. I don't think Stalin was counting on that till much, much later. And on the Saturday before the invasion of Russia by the Germans, the Soviet ambassador had been trying to get in contact with Ribbentrop, and that was a Saturday. Nobody was in town. Couldn't be. And guess why? Because the next day, at 3 o'clock in the morning, 3 million Germans and their allies were to invade the Soviet Union. And it is said that when Dekhanovsky finally met with Ribbentrop, Ribbentrop was drunk and had to issue formal declarations. And as Dekhanovsky left the room, Ribbentrop said, and he staggered over his desk, "Please tell Stalin I was against the attack."
Oh, my.
Fine words from our former champagne salesman, von Ribbentrop, who, of course, met his end at the gallows at Nuremberg. But look, you got other callers. I just thought I would interject that little piece of little vignette there.
I appreciate it, Jim. I do.
And there are a lot of things there that have been written and rewritten. And another thing, you know, as far as the portrayal of Stalin is concerned, it's really funny because, you know, Stalin always wanted to have himself portrayed as being there with Lenin when the revolution occurred.
Right.
Stalin wasn't there at all.
He wasn't.
He was over someplace getting drunk, having tea, telling stories about his exile in Siberia. And then, of course, when Eisenstein made the film, of course, Stalin was portrayed as being right there with Lenin and right there in the middle of the revolution when he wasn't at all. But after
a sort of zealot of the Russian Revolution.
But after 1956, after Khrushchev's secret speech of 22 February of 56, when Stalin was debunked, guess what happened to the Eisenstein's film? Stalin was removed. He was nowhere near Lenin. So it's just amazing. I mean, Stalin had done the same thing to Trotsky back in his day. You know, Trotsky was right there with Lenin. And Stalin had him cut out. And I guess it's just desserts. As far as the cinema is concerned, well, Mr. Stalin got himself cut out of the film. It's just amazing how much of this lined up on the cutting room floor, isn't it?
Why am I suddenly reminded of Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments and Yul Brynner declaring, "Let no longer the name of Moses be spoken in the land of Egypt."
I don't think he did a marvelous job with that. You know, with that, he really was.
But the idea, and scrubbing people from history goes all the way back to the successor to Akhenaten, scrubbing Akhenaten from reference.
All of his cartouches were removed, and they were scrubbed out. They did the same thing with Queen Hatshepsut, her nephew Tutmosis III, because she was his regent as a minor when he finally took power. And, of course, Hatshepsut's cartouche was removed as well. But, you know, going back to the Soviets, it's called, well, they have a unique way of portraying history, how they could snip and cut, and they can black out faces and rewrite a number of things that either happened or didn't happen. It just depends upon which regime is in power and who is in favor and who is not. These people were later known as non-people or un-people after they had, I guess, gone through their little trip at the Lubyanka or the Lefortovo prison in Moscow.
Indeed. Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening. It's good to hear from you.
There'd be one Russian diplomat, I'll tell you this,
yeah,
who survived it all. As a matter of fact, he was the interpreter with Molotov and Stalin, Molotov and Ribbentrop in Berlin. I met the man. And I remarked upon him because he still looked like himself. He was a very handsome man. And I asked him, I said, how did you, it was a Norman Cousins lecture at USC Columbia. And I said, how in the world did you go through this and survive so well? And he said, well, the only thing I can tell you is our retirement system has improved considerably.
Oh, that reminds me of that Peter Falk line from The In-Laws from 1978 when he says, not getting killed, that's really the key to the benefits package.
There it is. There you have it.
Jim, have a good night.
You too.
Bye now. Jim calling from West Virginia, and let's see. I suspect this is Bill.
Have a good night.
Is
you too.
Is that you, Bill?
Yeah. Man, that's a guy I love to listen to when it comes to this. He really has such a handle on this stuff. He's a guy that I could say the name Brusiloff to when he knew who the hell I was talking about. Yeah, that's, you know, the amazing thing. And I wish I could... I don't know if you have my email address. I'm trying to find a place that I can talk to about books, especially World War One stuff, that is almost impossible to find. Now, the one you talked about last night, I have it written down. What's the title of that one again?
What, The Sleepwalkers?
The Sleepwalkers. Any idea who published the damn thing?
Yeah, HarperCollins.
Do that again.
HarperCollins.
Spell that first one.
H as in Henry, A as in Apple, R as in Robert, P as in Paul.
Oh, HarperCollins. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, I'll try to find it. If I can find any damn bookstores that aren't online, I hate that crap. Because I really have a problem getting... my computer's so old, it may not even work with you much with the net anymore, you know? But to try to find stuff like that to have it shipped to you, because then I have to run it to the other people who will put it on audio, unless there's an audio copy available, you know? I won't keep you because a lot of people need to use this line. But it was good to hear Jim tonight because of his knowledge is, you know. The only thing I'll mention, I was just hitting a spot in this one Landscape Turned Red, this book on Antietam. And the guys with the black hats had not been called the Iron Brigade yet. They were fighting their way through the... I believe through the Catoctin Mountains. Is that your bailiwick that far away from Virginia or not?
That's Marylandish.
Yeah, I know, but it's pretty darn close, isn't it?
Well, it's all part of the Appalachian chain.
No. But mileage, how far is it from you, mileage-wise, that whole area of northern Maryland?
Oh, golly. That's a solid 6 hours.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's six.
Because I know.
Yeah, 5-6 hours. Well, it's 6 hours for me to D.C., and basically I would just go over across 64 and up 81. So, Yeah, 4 or 5 hours.
I'm thinking of the guys when they crossed the Potomac, at the Potomac crossings, you know, down, well, when Lee divided his army up and sent a lot of it back to Harper's Ferry after he already bypassed it, and then he shipped Jackson and McLaws and some other people. McLaws was up on the damn Maryland Heights. That's one hell of a hill, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is.
Because I'll tell you what, when you make a run from Harper's through this, I don't know the number of the back roads. Somebody with a good computer may be able to like to find it. But because there's a back road that leads that way. And, of course, as you travel up this road, you go past a farm that was owned by a guy named Kennedy. And they had a guest there. I hope I haven't mentioned that before, that their guest was John Brown. That's where he hatched the movement from there to Harper's.
Wow.
And you hit it right on the head talking about, well, I'll give him the Civil War officer's name, Bobby Lee.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, a lot of those guys, well, they all knew each other, for Christ's sake, Bob. So that was the amazing, well, right after the surrender at Appomattox, one guy that went galloping over to the Confederate lines was George Meade. He wanted to talk to Lee. I think Lee had been superintendent at the point, wasn't he?
Yeah, at one point he was.
And that's when people started knowing each other. But, you know, the stuff you talked about tonight, this family violence can flare up, or the Great Depression can flare up into suicide by cop. That's an expression that you don't hear that much, but I've heard it before.
Well, it's coming into more and more currency. And under any other circumstance, that case in Arkansas would have been suicide by cop.
Yeah.
Had there not been a great big jumped up boatload of privilege involved. You know, I'm just happy it wasn't a story of a drunk white guy blowing away a 5-year-old.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of the fellows I knew, and I knew a lot of policemen hung out at bars that I worked. I mean, University Circle was close to the 5th District, which was one of the toughest districts in the city at that point. And they would congregate over there after a shift. And I got to know these guys. One of them was a Vietnam vet, an East Cleveland kid who grew up in the same area I did. When East Cleveland was Bob, I'll put it the way it was. It was a little Caucasian suburb. And it was surrounded by Cleveland Heights on one side and Cleveland on the other three. It's this little island. But I don't know how the hell it ever dropped into the middle of these other cities and retained independence. It's still independent, but it's in tough shape right now. And the other thing is, Bob, this heroin stuff was going on in the 60s. I turned down a shot of the stuff because I was just... Either I had
because
more common
gin was
sense
enough.
Than I thought, or I was just a coward. I don't know which. I was offered a buddy of mine borrowed my belt so he could tie up his arm and shoot. And he said, "You want to try it?" And I said, "No."
Ooh,
I guess maybe I'd read too much jazz history.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a great
and
place.
That's Charlie
a great place
Parker
to find out
and,
about it.
Lady Day, you know.
Yeah.
And if we could get them, it's sure going to eliminate a jerk like me in no time, you know. I'm having a little beef with my buddy right now. I'm trying to bring out my own. He's got a website and going, and I want to start selling my own stuff a little bit again. You know, it's there. Use it. Just get it out. Let people, it's not so much, Bob, I'm not going to retire on the money. That's for damn sure. It's not about money. It's about, let people hear the stuff.
And it's about, yeah, it's about legacy.
Speaking of let people hear, I'll let this, Jim is one guy I might be able to, would love to, if he could drop me an email through you, is get some damn World War I Eastern Front books that I could have put on recording for me. Because we know so little about that whole that whole mess over there, and that was a bloodletting in the worst possible way you could think. Well, even World War II, you know, there was a bunch of red fez wearing guys out of the Balkans who were part of the SS. I don't think I'm making that up. SS outfit that was basically Muslim and wore fez when they were on dress parade. See, that's the one thing about evil. It can attach itself to any religion in the world or any group of people in the world when they want to adopt it. You know, it's not limited to one or the other or one race or that race. It's unfortunately, it makes the rounds of humanity. And, take a look at the different dynasties in China and take a look at the figures they laid down for the rest of everybody else. Well, right now, there's a little dispute going on between Vietnam and China, isn't there, about some islands down there?
Japan, let's see, Japan and China, I know that.
Japan's in it, and I think the Vietnamese are claiming something. Because I've often wondered, because Vietnam, you know, Vietnam had a lot of coal, Bob.
I never realized that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Up in North Vietnam, there was a lot of coal. And I often wonder, is the thing where there's coal, there may be oil?
Quite often. Issue? Yeah, I mean, sure. Yeah. I mean, we've got an oil patch in West Virginia, and there's also coal.
The guys that dug the tunnel for the mine at Petersburg were Schuylkill coal miners in the Schuylkill area of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, they were anthracite miners.
Yep. Now, anthracite is the softer stuff?
No, that's the hard stuff.
It's the hard stuff, because I could never... What was the soft stuff?
Bituminous.
Oh, bituminous, yeah. Because all I ever learned about coal was early in life that people bitching about the cost of it, because every house that I knew of was coal heated in those days. My uncle was still getting coal delivered to his house, and I'd be up there working on my car, and I'd have to get out of the way so the guy could get the coal truck in there. I mean, we talk about a decrepit old machine, and dump the stuff. That was one case up here where they dumped it in the wrong chute. Fill the guy's basement with it. You can imagine the what that was like. You come home and find your basement full of coal instead of the coal bin. And what was it? There was a thing called the Iron Fireman. They used to put the coal in there and it moved it to the furnace.
Oh, kind of a domestic conveyor system.
Yeah. Of course, they're long gone. And then the other thing that was real popular was gas incinerators in the basement, where you put your garbage in the burnables down this thing, and the gas burned it up.
And we wonder why. And we wonder why we have a carbon in the atmosphere problem.
We do. I mean, who the Republicans, the head of the Republican Party in the House, he doesn't seem to understand that, does he?
I'm not competent to talk about climate change. You know what? That's the first true thing he's said in a long time, but it doesn't mean that he's not willing to deny it. But it's fascinating. I ran across a story this evening in preparing for the program. It turns out that the American people have a much different approach to the words global warming than they do climate change. If you poll Americans, Bill, and ask them how they feel about global warming, they'll tell you that they're worried about it. If you ask them about climate change, they'll tell you it's a hoax.
Yeah. Well, doesn't that have something to do with a guy named Frank Luntz?
That probably does, yeah.
Maybe it actually should be more like Walter Lance, as far as that, you know.
Yeah, it does go back to Frank Luntz, because it was 2003 when he wrote, "It's time for us to start talking about climate change instead of global warming. Climate change is less frightening than global warming."
Yeah. Yeah. The things you learn, I learned from an old guy in Lake County, there's a certain type of peach that basically grows along the shores of Erie, and it's a type of a name, and you can find it up. You can go all the way to Niagara Falls and along the lakes, and you'll find the same damn peach. The other thing is, when you're driving from, I think it was from Buffalo to Toronto, or from or crossing into Canada and going through Niagara, you can look over your right, and occasionally I saw some huge ship way up in the air. That's the St. Lawrence Seaway coming up, a ship. I mean, you can see it sitting there in the air, and you're looking at it and saying, did I just see that or what? Maybe I should quit drinking, you know? Maybe I should quit a lot of things. I'm starting to hallucinate. What is that called, Bob? Somebody in their family should be able to tell me what the hell that lock was. St. Catharines? That area? Is where the damn St. Lawrence Seaway cuts in, you know? To the Great Lakes. And in Canada, my dad, you've never seen, so Peterborough has the biggest lift locks, inland that I've ever seen in my life. It's just amazing. And canals where they run, you sure as hell know about. What's the, where they blasted right through a mountain on the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal?
Yeah, that's in Cumberland, Maryland, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. The Cumberland, was that the end of the line for that thing?
Yeah.
Because the railroads came along and killed it. Because there was two canals running, one at each end of the state of Ohio. Went from the Ohio River all the way up to Lake Erie, you know. Anyway, I'll let you go, but hang in there.
We're going to try, Bill. It's awful good to talk to you. You have yourself a good evening, all right?
You too, sir. Thank you.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Let's see. We'll take a little break here. A reminder, we kind of ran out there and then stalled. We are at $124.45 to go in this evening's fundraising. The PayPal button's at headonradionetwork.com, or if you prefer to go by the traditional mail route, you can do that as well. Just shoot me a note so I can tell Boss Man Wayne he doesn't have to wear his spider-proof gloves to the mailbox next time he goes. But anyway, yeah, that's roughly 12 people at 10 bucks a piece. 10 people at 12 bucks a piece. You get the idea. But thanks, big thanks to Barry and Asa and to Anthony for all the help. Thank you very, very much. And we'll take a break and come back. Your calls, or perhaps more Thorn in the Side Thursday, horrifying stories of life in America. Either way is fine. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's
construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning, death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah. World stops turning, ashes where the body's burning. No more war pigs have the power, and as God has struck the hour, day of judgment, God is calling. On the knees the war pigs crawling, begging mercies for the sins. Satan laughing spreads his wings. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Thank you.
Nothing quite like it. Black Sabbath from the 1971 Paranoid album, War Pigs. Note coming in from Jeff. He says, gotta love it, Bob, War Pigs. I wish I still had my vinyl copy. Oh, think about all the vinyl I used to have. Oh, my God. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. Thanks to Sal. Sal apparently shares something in common with me. He does not like strange numbers. And so, consequently, since we were at $124.45 to go to make our fundraising goal for the evening, Sal just took us down to a nice, round, level, easy to figure out, $120. So $120 to go for fundraising this evening. Thank you, Sal. 12 at 10, 10 at 12, 2 at 60, 4 at 30, 3 at 40. That I can handle.
Yeah.
thank you, Sal. Thank you very much. It would be nice to finish our fundraising goal this evening, and that way we'll go into Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow with just our regular evening's fundraising to be done. A reminder, we're probably not going to be able to utilize the telephone number tomorrow evening for Friday on the Front Porch. We'll just be going with the Skype gang as it is. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Grant from Portland.
Hey, Grant. What's happening?
Well, you know, something once in a while, an article comes up that really grabs your attention, and this got mine. It filed under the class war category. There's something being floated by the 1%, a new Trojan horse called inclusive capitalism. I don't know if you've seen anything about that.
No, but you clench your teeth and say inclusive capitalism really, really well, Grant. Oh, Muffy. It's capitalism for the little people.
That's right, Chip. Yeah.
Oh, that was perfect. Right, you are, Chipper.
Well, it's pretty funny because, you know, here we have a book come out by Stiglitz talking about inequality and even proposing remedies, you know, to systemically shore off the inequality problem that's ripping society apart. We have Capital in the 21st Century by Thomas Piketty. And the most they can come up with is, you know, putting their fingers in their ears and la, 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 or calling him a dumbass or something. It's about the best counter-argument, you know, they've been able to levy so far.
Yeah, and yet from the left, the best counter-argument to Piketty is Marx.
Yeah.
Because, as Dr. John pointed out a while back, the problem with Piketty is that he thinks that capitalism is just sort of here to stay, and
right.
that you know, if it just does a few things right, it will be a little less heinous. Whereas, you know, right. Marx argues that sooner or later capitalism will die of its own weight.
Right, will eat its own legs, and this kind of thing. Yeah, I mean the other thing I think Piketty misses is the impact of peak oil. I think he didn't quite factor in, I think, enough of the hue and cry and desperation that comes with the peak oil dilemma. So just kind of putting that out there.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think he did a pretty good book, did a pretty good bit of work there. I have yet to read it. A buddy of mine is reading it, and we're kind of discussing it as he goes along. It's a bit of a slog, some 600-odd pages of it.
Yeah, I haven't had the $25 to put out for it on Kindle yet, so.
Yeah, well, he's going to loan me. He's going to let me borrow it for a while, so I don't quite have the scratch either. But the thing is, what I'm reading in this article is, there's an entire conference about this inclusive capitalism going on, and it's mainly out of a direct fear of global revolt.
Well, I mean, do you know enough about it to offer up a definition of what inclusive capitalism is?
Well, not really. I mean, it looks as though they're afraid of revolt, so they're coming up with language You know, it's sort of cosmetic language about a more inclusive capitalism rather than one that's as exploitative. I mean, that seems to be the gist, the direction they're speaking anyways. But I just
I guess that's the second question. Is it just lip service, or are they actually trying to accomplish something?
I think it's cosmetic. You know, let's look at the fiber of what they are. Okay. You know, and how they get what they get through that exploitation. When have you ever known somebody who mainlines it like these guys do to ever back off to a significant enough degree where life becomes livable for the, you know, the little people? That's the thing about these guys. You know, they freebase money all the time. And I just don't think they got it in them to really do something that's equitable. I mean, the fraud still will go on. The money laundering still goes on. All this still goes on. The tax evasion, the rigging of the incentives, you know, in hell. I mean, you'd act like they cut off a finger if you raise the minimum wage or something, you know, the whole thing combined. I think they're just so rigged and geared to what they're doing that they're, you know, I think it's just going to have to go off the cliff. Let it melt down at this point. I think it's going to be cosmetic. I don't think they're going to be capable of reforming themselves. I think they're too gluttonous.
Well, I mean, haven't we tried that capitalism of inclusion before, unless I'm just missing what their idea is, Grant? Because, see, I remember when all the employees of this well-meaning corporation called Enron practiced inclusive capitalism by letting all of the employees buy all the Enron stock that they wanted.
Yeah, they got plugged real good, didn't they?
Yeah, and then there are a little closer to home for me, there are all the Alpha Natural Resources workers who participated in the stock sharing, and you know they were all going to be coal billionaires until the stock fell from $75 a share down to $4.
Right.
Some retirement, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, look at what the 401ks do. They're really 201ks. And there's several articles coming out about those things. As basically just sleight of hand. You
well,
know,
Ron in Raleigh just sent in an email. He said, inclusive capitalism sounds like compassionate conservatism, doesn't it?
Yes, bingo.
You know, this is just sloganeering.
Yeah. I knew these guys are just, they're floating a Trojan horse. You know, it's like maybe they'll bribe a few more people off at the deeper layers towards poverty just to be quiet or something like that, you know. But you think about it. I mean, if the best they can do is sort of a cosmetic lip service in the face of a global revolt, that's pretty weak tea. If you think about it.
Or then we've got Horst's interpretation in the chat room. He says, inclusive capitalism, micro loans for taco truck entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I could see it. But anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you. It's just kind of rankled
but,
my nose.
Well, yeah, I'm fascinated with the idea, but... even if it was anything more than cosmetic, basically it would be inviting some of the people who are being dined upon to dine upon other people.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, and there's no getting around it, capitalism is cannibalistic.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I mean, we've got thousands of people dead over the last century in West Virginia. And, you know, maybe they died in a slate fall, or maybe they died of black lung, or maybe they died in a gas explosion. But at the end of the day, they died of capitalism, Grant. And the women who died in the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, they died of capitalism. The people who died in the Ludlow massacre died of capitalism. It's damned well a terminal illness, and no doubt about it.
Uh-huh. That's the thing. I mean, it really does seem to me like all it can ever do nowadays, it can destroy, it can poison, it can make war. But it has a hell of a hard time actually creating something sustainable.
It's almost impossible.
And I don't have an alternate model right off the top of my head to go to.
Marxism?
I lean more towards something like socialism with, I like having some kind of a free enterprise layer to it, but I don't like the free enterprise becoming an excuse to plunder the commons. You know, I guess in my heart of hearts, I'm looking for a commons without tyranny. You know, and then, you know, something that everybody leverages off of. But they don't plunder it, you see.
Yeah.
I guess that's more where I'm going, where I would like to go. Does that sound like Sweden?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, the Swedish economy is not collapsing. I, for some reason or another, Ferg and I just decided just to take a little walk today, and we walked down to Union Station. It's always fun to walk through there. Because that's a great big monument to the railroad barons. Remember, it was built by the railroad barons. The government didn't build Union Station because, of course, the government can't.
Right.
But, you know, the railroad's got a ton of welfare off of it, and, well, there it is. But I was just sitting there thinking, walking around thinking, because Washington will make you think these crazy thoughts. How much fun it would be if the next time in the conversation about, for instance, the minimum wage, the next right-wing nut job idiot, Chamber of Commerce, Enterprise Heritage Institute feller says to either the Senate or the House, well, you know, the economy will collapse if we raise the minimum wage to $15. It would be so much fun if something that has been said on this program, and I'm sure it's been said on others, if the guy who says that in testimony before Congress was to be challenged by some not timorous soul who would say, you know, you said, and you use the staff to come up with the numbers, but so I'm just improvising, you know, you said that in 1946, and you were wrong, and the economy didn't collapse, and you said that in 1953, and you were wrong, and the economy didn't collapse, and you said that in 1967, and you were wrong, and the economy didn't collapse, and you said that in 1980, and you were wrong, and the economy didn't collapse. How many more times do you have to be wrong before we can just consider you to be the idiot you are?
Exactly. Well, not only that, but think about it. I mean, we're in a contracting economy because they keep starving out the wage demand from the economy. There's no... You know, if you've got tons and tons and tons of money, you know, you're not going to spend that much, and the majority of people don't even have the money because they're not paid anything. All the costs go up, none of the wages go up, so guess what? You've got a wage demand problem. You can't, I mean, if anything, if they raise the minimum wage to, say, $15 an hour, the thing to watch out for is an overheating economy, because that's like poop through a goose. I mean, that's going to go just, boom, gangbusters with the amount of money that's now in people's pockets going to heat everything up.
They're going to go out and buy stuff.
Exactly. They spend money. They're not hoarders. I mean, they act like people, you know, are a hoarding generation, and it's not the case. And it doesn't stick around long in the pocket, particularly if you're not of any particular means, you know, great means. You need that every single dollar to go somewhere. But, they just act like you hit them or something. Just even mentioning raising the minimum wage, it's amazing. And yet these are supposed to be our captains of industry. They should know better. They really should know better.
Oh, well, but they don't know better, Grant, because they can't see past their own greed. This has gotten to, you know, this has gotten past prudent business. This has gotten to the robber baron stage, where the perception is that if somebody else has something, that means that's something the capitalist in question has less of. You know, where everything is some sort of sick zero sum game.
I see.
And it's not that way. I mean, that's a you know, that's a that's it's a royalist almost pre-Columbian mercantilist approach where if you know, I mean, think about the Spanish drive for gold in the New World. Well, you know, if they have all the gold, then that means Britain doesn't have any and France doesn't have. But that's bullshit. You know, but we'll control the gold supply. And I remember, and you can read about it in 1493 by Charles C. Mann. He talks about how Spain idiotically crashed the world economy by flooding the world with silver when they discovered that monumental deposit of it in what, Bolivia?
Mm-hmm.
In the 16th century. And for a while they were rich, and then they were as rich as they were poor.
Couldn't give it away at some point, huh?
Right, because they flooded the market with the stuff.
I see.
And of course, I'm no economist.
Well, neither am I, but I can, you know, but it can count. You know?
I mean, I come at these things from what I consider to be, or hope are, very practical perspectives. And, you know, the horrors of the October Revolution in 1917 in Russia, the horrors of the terror in 1793 in France, the excesses of the Arab Spring in Egypt were all brought about when ordinary people who would ordinarily just go about their busy little lives of living in quiet desperation, well, they got to the point where they had nothing to lose because they could no longer eat food.
Yep.
And essentials like food will drive the rich don't understand it. They, you know, the 1%, the 1/10 of 1%, prefer not to see it. They think they live in some rarefied world, but their entire existence is very precariously perched on the ability of people that they deem that they deign not to even acknowledge exist, being able to simply have bread every day. And the thing is, we have gotten to a point in this world where that godforsaken 1% begrudges the bread.
Every crumb.
Yeah. And that will bring about their downfall. I mean, I am such a pathetic nerd that I think about, you know, China owning Smithfield Meats and the fact that it seems impossible. I mean, I've been looking and looking. I still haven't found one. Other folks have written to me and said, yeah, this brand, that brand. But if I walk into a convenience store and want to buy a bottle of apple juice, it's from China. Okay. When you consider the amount of farmland in the heartland of America, that's not growing anything but, Roundup ready genetically modified corn that cannot be eaten by a human being under any circumstance until it's been fracked into, and they really do, it's fracturing just like an oil refinery, fractured into high fructose corn syrup or maltodextrin or, you know, whatever. Well, then, I mean, that way lies famine. And, you know, those cornfields are not being planted with that crap because the world will starve without more high fructose corn syrup. It's being planted that way because it's good for the wealth class of the 1% or the 1/10 of 1%. And that way lies disaster.
I agree.
Even if you don't take into account the potential for famine or something like that from all of these frankenfoods, that way still lies disaster.
I agree.
I remember a few years ago, and bless his heart, I still miss him, when Bart Kopp found out that Mexican farmers were tilling under 200-year-old agave plantations to plant corn for ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
And poor Bart Kopp just about went sideways. Well, it was real. I mean, there is Really? We've planted the entire middle of the United States with number two field grade corn when parts of the world are starving. I mean, I ran across a news story today where Uganda, oh my God, has declared that it's going to be an oil producing nation here in just a few more years. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I guess as long as none of the oil field engineers or petroleum producing engineers are gay.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we can't be producing it. No, because we got to put the gays away. I wonder if a gay Ugandan will get a dispensation if he knows where to drill a goddamned oil well.
Just about, isn't it? Well, it's really all about the money, so I think you're onto something. It's just about money.
Yeah. It always is,
always
isn't
has
it?
Been. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to unwillingly drag you into a Grant rant, but I'm still waiting on one of those.
No, that's right. Usually I reserve that for the likes of Mr. Sessions the Hood, you know. I tell you what, the Southern Republican senators are the ones that really set me off a lot. Just the stuff they come up with is infuriating. And then even a couple from Utah set me off a couple times. You know, child labor laws are unconstitutional.
Oh, I love the fact that, Wasatch County, Utah, is out there airbrushing high school girls' pictures because you never know when a little bit of shoulder might drive some young Utah man half crazy with lust. You know that you've heard this, haven't you?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
I'm
no.
Hilarious.
Oh, poor Grant. So some girls. The high school yearbook just came out at this one high school in Utah, and I think it's Wasatch County or something.
Uh-huh.
And a bunch of the girls started looking at their pictures, and they found out that, and you know, they remember what they wore on picture day.
Sure.
And some of these filthy heathen bearers of the sin of Eve females, they wore tops that showed their bare shoulders, Grant.
Scandalous. Scandalous, I say.
And so the God-fearing members of the school board had no choice but to cut and paste clothing onto the photographs of their shoulders.
Oh, my God.
Now, of course,
that's puritanical. Where are these guys from? Holy cow.
Utah.
What century are they from?
21st century Utah. That's the problem, Grant. Let's see. One little girl wore a little dark, perfectly tasteful, I mean, it's not like she, tank top with some thin, you know, straps.
Sure.
And by the time she got her yearbook back, she had had some black sleeves. And this is a floral print tank. She'd had some black sleeves cut and pasted in onto her filthy demon possessed naked shoulder arms. Because you know how it is with them. You know how it is with them Utah boys, Grant.
Yeah.
I mean, they see a hint of shoulder, and they just go plumb wild. Men in Utah cannot be expected to control themselves at the sight of a shoulder.
Evidently. That is totally ridiculous.
I don't know.
Oh,
maybe
wow.
by next year in Wasatch County, they'll go full burka.
Well, they bring back corsets or something.
He said the school district superintendent is Terry E. Shoemaker, Grant, and he said, "We only apologize in the sense that we want to be more consistent with what we're trying to do. In that sense, we can help kids better prepare for their future by knowing how to dress appropriately for things." The only thing is, the only questions of appropriate dress had to do with females, Grant.
Well, not only that, but who elected him as the dress code cop? Nobody signed on to anything like that.
Oh, the bishop, maybe? I mean, you know. One girl said, my shirt was a cream color, and the color of the cover-up was completely white. It looked like whiteout on my skin.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. He's sitting in the background, determining what's kosher and what's not. And, you know, evidently, these kids had no prior warning of, you know, what to wear or anything else.
Well, no, they were warned. They were warned.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a dress code. You know, they were warned about displaying their sinful female natures.
Oh my God!
And I mean, this is not private school. This is public school, Grant. But again, it's only the girls because no guys are going to show up wearing a top with spaghetti straps.
Right.
But you got to wonder what would have happened if a guy had shown up in like a late 70s Kiana disco shirt with the big floppy collar and had it, you know, unbuttoned down to his solar plexus with some gold chains and a few little sad sprouts of pubescent chest hair on it. Would that have gotten
Danny in a bag of chips?
Yeah, I mean, would they have given him a some sort of an undershirt? I doubt it.
No, I probably wouldn't. It's a patriarchal society anyway over there.
Patriarchy sucks.
So I hear. In fact, I see it scribbled on the subway walls every so often, right? I mean,
the words of the prophet are written on the subway walls and tenement halls?
That's right. That's right. No, I mean, that the word's kind of gone out on patriarchy. I'll give it another generation or two. That's about it. The thing I love about the women these days is they don't put up with shit.
Oh, I love a little bit of cultural catchment. Just got a note from Ron in Raleigh. He says, I'm scandalized.
Scandalized, I say.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now, heaven knows, anything goes. And Ron says, except, I guess, shoulders in Utah. Shoulders, I tell you. Shoulders. Fluoride mandrake and little children's ice cream. And bare shoulders right. In Utah. Oh, God.
Wow. No, I didn't know about that.
No tequila, wow. No swirly straw. I'm screwed again.
Well, anyway, let the global revolt begin.
And you know what? Let it begin in Utah.
Exactly.
Roll the tumbrel up to the superintendent's office and let it be pushed by girls with bare shoulders. Well, at least nobody drug them across the yard or paralyzed them on their left sides for it. They just got airbrushed.
Yeah, it's an asshole or what, huh?
Hey, ugh. Hey, Grant, you have yourself a good evening.
All right, man. Take care.
All right, you too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
My buddy Grant calling from Portland. Yeah, I mean, sure. There's a continuum of this is awful, this is not quite so awful. That, but wouldn't you be just a little put off if you dressed your daughter perfectly appropriately, sent her off to get her 10th grade yearbook picture taken, and then you get the yearbook picture taken and you find out that they've played paper dolls with her? I mean, it's kind of gross, isn't it? Hey, big thanks going out to Greg. Thank you, Greg. We are now down to only $100 to go for this evening's fundraising. That's a big deal. Thank you, Greg, very much. Hopefully we'll make up that 100 between now and say airtime tomorrow evening. Yeah, that's right. That's right, Devin. Borderer babes. Red-headed Hellcats. Yeah, next year they'll probably require the girls in Wasatch County to wear burkas and bonnets. Borderer babes. God. Yeah, it goes on. It goes on like that. By the way, let's do an international story on the way out this evening. You know, there's ongoing tension about as the Palestinians try to. By the way, I got another right-wing book pitch, either this morning or yesterday, explaining why Palestinians don't really exist. Wow. Yesterday, and I didn't even know there was such a day. Anyway, the Palestinians are trying to pull together a compromise government between the Palestinian Authority and, yeah. But I didn't know there was such a thing as Jerusalem Day. I'll have to check in with our authority on Jewish holidays. I mean, I know about Rosh Hashanah and Purim, and I know about Yom Kippur, Passover, of course. I didn't know there was Jerusalem Day, but apparently there is. And you tell me, I'm not going to say anything. See if this strikes a historical note with you. It strikes me as being a really bad idea. Apparently on Jerusalem Day, Israelis, and particularly Israeli children, literally wrap themselves in the Israeli flag and go marching through predominantly Arab East Jerusalem. Now, you remember East Jerusalem is what got annexed after the Six-Day War in 1967. And police closed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound because they just smelled trouble. Bibi Netanyahu gave a speech in which he pledged never to allow the city to be divided. He said, 47 years ago, Jerusalem was unified, and it will never be divided again. This is not only a national holiday, it is a national miracle. Really, a miracle. So what they do is they go marching through Arab neighborhoods wrapped in and waving the Israeli flag. I could swear that's been done some other places in history, too, against an oppressed minority. They march through the Damascus Gate. It's called a flag march. And as they approach the Damascus Gate, the Israeli police drove Palestinians out of the area. The Palestinians threw rocks. The cops responded with stun grenades. Despite the fact that the Israelis were marching through waving flags and basically rubbing the Palestinians' noses in it, Palestinian men were arrested for public disorder. Interestingly, the peace contingent in Israel didn't participate in this overtly fascist parade. There was an alternative rally in central Jerusalem in which the Israeli peace activists carried placards that read peace, shalom, and carried biblical Bible verses about coexistence and tolerance. 27-year-old student Polina Skalyarevsky took part, and she said, "We don't feel that we belong to the celebrations. We want a clear statement that Jerusalem is a city of peace, not of violence." God, that poor, blood-soaked, awful city. That awful, awful place. Here's the interesting part. While hundreds, maybe thousands, marched waving their flags through the Arab quarter, Arab half of the city, the people who were carrying the placards in central Jerusalem that said peace and shalom, the report I'm looking at says there were only a few dozen. Sounds like fascism's winning out. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we are now down. Thank you very much, Thomas. We are now down below the $100 threshold, and we've only got $90 to go. Thank you very much, Thomas. Blow your horn, Thomas says. Indeed, indeed. And, you know, it's not just the thing in Jerusalem. Fascism is on the march in a lot of I've been doing some reading on the EU parliamentary elections, and right-wingery and fascism and outright neo-Nazism is on a shocking, shocking comeback. And that's a lousy thing to have coming back 100 years after the First World War. It really, really is. But at least we're not closing the program this evening with the story of a 3-year-old who blew away his 18-month-old brother. So I guess we'll take our victories where we go. Oh, wait. Damn. Headline, Florida 6-year-old kills grandfather with AK-47 left unattended by boy's uncle at family picnic. Because, you know, it's just not a family picnic if you don't bring the family AK-47 with you. Twenty-eight-year-old Juan Manuel Martinez Jr. has been charged with culpable negligence of a firearm for not keeping an eye on his loaded AK-47. How about for bringing a loaded AK-47 to a family picnic? No, that would violate the Second Amendment. His 6-year-old nephew picked it up and blew away Grandpa. Martinez was having a beer with his father, Juan Manuel Martinez Sr., when they started talking hunting. And Martinez brought out his AK-47 and handed it to his father, who then set it on a table. And then the 6-year-old picked up the gun and blew away Grandpa. Martinez Jr. said, "You know, it's not his fault. He didn't know what he was doing. He's just a little boy. I love him. He's my family. I love all my family." We heard the gunshot go off. My father was struck in the chest before he was airlifted to the hospital, and they told us that he passed. I should have never brought the firearm out. In this particular case, investigators informed us that there was alcohol involved. Not only alcohol, we also had drugs. We had cocaine, said Miami-Dade Police Detective Alvaro Zabaleta. So that means we got lots of other things to blame besides goddamn guns. Sorry. Thought we were going to get... Nope. So it's time to get out of here. Thank you, one and all, for everything you do to keep all of this going. You are who keeps all this going. And hopefully we won't start the program tomorrow with a deficit. Either way, though, Friday on the front porch tomorrow, and I don't know about you, but I'm darn sure looking forward to it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Sparky and Lottie and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.